to the band. Yeah. Man, no better way to start Memorial Weekend with a boss, right? I mean, man, it's just like Americana all over. Well, happy Memorial Day weekend to you. As Eric said, there's a lot of big things going on in Indianapolis this weekend. And if you're here for the first time, we're especially glad you've chosen to join us because we realize there's a lot of places you could be. And this whole idea of chasing our dreams and this being the land of hopes and dreams, I mean, you know, the many who protect us and have given their lives, even in the past, to preserve the right for us to dream and be free is a part of the fabric of our culture. And so we're going to wrap this series up today talking about being dreamers. And my name's Kurt, by the way. If we haven't had a chance to meet, it's great to meet you. And I realize that we've got quite a few people who are going to be tuning into the podcast this week. And so let me just say a word to those of you tuning in this week. Thanks for inviting us. You know, you're probably sitting on the lake or, you know, up at your beach house. And we're here. I mean, we have nothing going on. There's a whole bunch of us. Thanks for inviting us. No, not really. But, you know, we're glad you're listening if you are listening to the podcast. And I do want to tell you that everyone who came into the venue received, what'd you call it? A Bago Rocket Fund. And so make sure you stop by Crosspoint in the Commons this week. And we'll have some of these available. And you can do the wrap up yourself. You can take communion while you're driving to work or whatever you would like to do as we will be here in a bit. So we're going to wrap up today, as I said, talking about legacy and the dreams that we dream and the dreams that we pursue and how our dreams actually inspire the next generation. And so much of what I want to kind of share with you today has come out of my personal experience over the last really, you know, 12 or 13 weeks as I've been a part of this thing with a number of other guys here at Crosspoint called Fight Club. Any Fight Club guys in the room today? Yeah, you're all at the race, aren't you? Yeah. there are about 40 guys that have been a part of this journey in some way, shape, or form, and really we've been exploring what it means to be the men we're created to be, but also one of the books we read through this experience was called Chase the Lion by Mark Batterson, and we've been talking about what that 500-pound lion is in our lives. What's that dream? What's that thing that just seems like we're not able to overcome it or achieve it, and yet, short of God's intervention, we won't, but we're going to continue chasing to see how God works in our lives. In fact, buried in 2 Samuel chapter 23, verse 20, is one of the most counterintuitive kind of verses or pictures of courage that we find in the entire Bible. And it's a little more than a biblical byline. I mean, if you're not looking for it, you'll just slide right by it as you read. But it gives this incredible storyline of what I believe God wants to do in each and every one of our lives and families. And so here's what it says, 2 Samuel chapter 23, verse 20. So there was also Benaiah, son of Jehoiada, a valiant warrior from Kabzeel. He did many heroic deeds, which included killing two champions of Moab. And then here's this one sentence right here. Another time on a snowy day, he chased a lion down into a pit and killed it. Napoleon Bonaparte, he once said, the little, you know, 4'8" general of the French army, he said, you know, there's regular courage and then there's 2 o'clock in the morning courage. He said, the rarest attribute among generals is 2 o'clock in the morning courage. What we see right here in Benaiah is 2 o'clock in the morning courage, right? I mean, this idea of why would you chase a lion into a pit? Usually you run the other way. And what I want us to see today as we look at this and dance around what this means for our lives is, you know, every single one of us, you included, is one step, one decision, one moment away, one risk away from a totally different life. I mean, as we think about where we are right now, we're only one decision away from a totally different trajectory. And so the Bible doesn't really give us much of a picture of what was going on in Benaiah's life when he crossed paths with this lion. We don't know what time of day it was. We don't know what was going on in the context of the tribe that he was in. We don't know what was going through his mind. We just get this snapshot of this 2 o'clock in the morning courage and this ballsy move that Benaiah makes to follow this lion, not only through the wilderness, but into a pit. And this becomes a defining moment in his journey, in his life, and in his relationship with God. In fact, you know, just put yourself in Benaiah's shoes for just a moment. This is like a made-for-TV movie, right? I mean, you can almost see it in your mind. It's like Benaiah's out there. It's wintertime, obviously, if it's snowing. The breath from his nostrils is kind of, you know, like blurring his vision. And out of the corner of his eye, he catches movement. He all of a sudden realizes that it's a lion and he is the prey. He's like food all of a sudden. And what would your natural inclination be to do right there? You'd butt pucker, right? You'd be like, whoa, you know, you just tighten right up and adrenaline would kick in and realize like a fully grown lion can run upwards of 36 miles an hour, leap 30 feet in a single bound. And yet you realize if you're benign, man, I don't stand a chance. And yet that does not prevent him from giving chase to this lion. I mean, he can't keep pace, but what he can do is follow the cat prints in the snow. And so that's what he does. He actually comes to a place where the cat prints stop, and somehow the lion must have fallen into a cavernous pit, or somehow the earth underneath the lion gave way. He falls into the pit, and Benaiah finds him in there, looks down to this dark pit. All he sees are two glowing yellow cat eyes staring up to him. I mean, so imagine this on the big screen in front of you, right? Somebody's going to make a movie out of this someday. Benaiah begins to walk away from the pit, and the whole crowd just like exhales. Thank God he's walking away. He's not walking away. He's just getting enough space to make a running leap of faith into the pit with the lion. And as he does, there's a screech and a roar and then deafening silence. And now everybody stopped eating popcorn at this point, right? They're like... And everyone would expect that this lion would jump out of the pit, you know, shake off his mane, and go on with his life, but no. All of a sudden, here comes a human hand reaching up and grabbing a root, whatever it can get its hands on, and here comes Benaiah pulling himself up out of the pit. Right, this one warrior from this tribe of Kabzeel claims this epic victory, this moment, this risk he took that changes the rest of his life. I mean, this gets your attention, right? When we do those kinds of things. One of the questions I want us to ask ourselves today is, you know, am I leading the kind of life that demands the attention of the next generation? I mean, am I leading the kind of life that the next generation looks at? And I'm not talking the glitz and glamour, and I'm talking, am I kind of leading the kind of life that the people behind me are going, man, there's something about that that I want to pursue as well. In one of our family's favorite movies, a movie named We Bought a Zoo, we've been watching this like on repeat in our car when we travel. If you haven't seen it, it's a story of Benjamin Mee, who is a single dad. His wife has passed away from cancer, and he's basically, the whole movie is about how he's trying to rebuild his life, trying to help his kids cope through the loss of their mother. And so his family, he moves his family out of the city, and they go out into the country, and they find this dilapidated house that's connected to a zoo. And the zoo's about to close down, but he gets a vision of what their lives could look like if he actually buys this house, takes on the zoo, hence the name We Bought a Zoo. He buys the zoo, and he catches a dream that will inspire dreams in his own kids. In fact, I want you to see the closing scene of this movie that describes kind of, in a short picture, why he did what he did. Take a look.
Do you remember what you told me when I was a kid?
You only have to be courageous for 20 seconds.
It has guided me my entire life.
All right, ladies first. Where are we going?
Now, hang on. So, okay. Stop. She was right there. This is the moment where both of you became a possibility.
I love that you're telling stories again.
This is the story before the story. This is where you and you begin. Because this... where I met your mom. She was sitting right there in that chair. Hang on.
Hey, so I was walking by and I saw, and I literally stopped like this, just stopped and went, oh my God. That is the most beautiful woman I have ever seen in my entire life. But I've never done anything like this. I'd never gone and talked to a total stranger before, but she was right there. And so I thought to myself, 20 seconds, right? Go.
Now I'm in the restaurant, and I'm terrified, thinking about leaving. I can actually touch her. She's right there. She still hasn't seen me. And I still have 15 seconds of courage left. I'm going for it. Bravery. Here's what I said. I said, excuse me.
Hi, Mom.
Hi, Mommy.
Why would an amazing woman like you even talk to someone like me?
Why not?
We can all compose ourselves now. I'll be driving down the road and be crying, right? You know, every time I hear that. But two words that changed everything, right? Not just why, but why not? Why not? Mark Batterson, in his book, he says, in every dream journey, there comes a moment when you have to quit living as if the purpose of life is to arrive safely at death. You have to go after a dream that is destined to fail without divine intervention. See, most of us would say we believe that God is real, but I want us to think about what our lives would really look like if we lived as if God was real. In 2 Samuel 23, I mean, we just find this little snippet of this guy by the name of Benaiah. I mean, you know, he's this guy that chases a lion. Instead of running from the lion, he chases the lion into a pit on a snowy day. I mean, why would somebody do this other than somebody who wants to build their resume because they know they may eventually have the chance one day to become the personal bodyguard of the king of the nation of Israel, which could lead them one day to become the commander-in-chief of the army of the nation of Israel. And so when you read, you know, 2 Samuel 23, I mean, it's a little more than just a laundry list of 37 names. I mean, these are some of David's best friends, who eventually become King David. Their courage is unmatched, and so is their loyalty. And these are the men who become known as David's mighty men, which raises a few questions. How do you become a mighty man? How do you become a part of this list of men, these 37 men, which were known as David's mighty men? I mean, what was it that set these men apart? What was it that took this ragtag group of rebels, this band of brothers, if you will, and caused them to risk their lives for something that seemed like a lost cause? It's because these mighty men were drawn to a dreamer. A dreamer with a God-sized dream. And it's the same thing. It's the same kind of dream that can draw people to you and I. See, without his band of brothers, David's dream of becoming king would have just been a pipe dream. I mean, his destiny was actually tied to these 37 men known as the mighty men. And their destiny was tied to David's. See, for you and for me, our dreams, the things that 500-pound lion that God puts in our life is possible because there were dreams dreamed for you before you. There were dreams that inspired you. It's called your dream lineage or your dream downline. I mean, think of it like a domino effect, that there are certain people before you in your life that have influenced you, that dream dreams and accomplished them, and you seeing them accomplish those things actually inspired you to go after your dreams. You know, for Benaiah, he helped David fulfill his dream. And Benaiah, he fulfilled his dream, and so David fulfilled his as well. I mean, it's almost this two-way street where they each help one another get to the next place. See, as the crown was passed from King David to his son Solomon, see Benaiah, he was actually the personal bodyguard because of his bravery in the pit with the lion. He got promoted to bodyguard of the king of the nation of Israel. But when the crown was passed to King Solomon, David's son, Benaiah was promoted to commander-in-chief of the Israeli army. And see, Solomon was able to do something that David never did. In fact, David was the one that God gave the dream to rebuild the temple of the nation of Israel. That was one of David's dreams. One of the things he began to order his life around, but God told him one day, he said, David, you're not going to be the one to do it. He said, your dream is actually going to be fulfilled through your son Solomon. And it was actually Solomon, David's son, who completed the dream. So here's what I want us to see, that your greatest legacy, whatever that dream is that God's put in your heart for you to be or to overcome or to achieve or to go after or fight against, whatever it might be, your greatest legacy isn't going to be fulfilled by fulfilling that dream. Your greatest legacy is the next generation of dreamers who are inspired by your dream. Let me say that again. Your greatest legacy is the next generation of dreamers who are going to be inspired by you going after your dream. Let me connect some dots for how this has played out in my life. Back in 1959, my grandparents, Jim and Laverne Walters, they had a growing family. They're a pastor in a small church here in Indiana. And they got a burden to move to a small little town about an hour south of here, Columbus, Indiana, and to start a brand new church for people who are far from God. 1959. This wasn't even being done. I mean, this, you know, if you were a pastor, you just found a church and you pastored. You didn't start new things. But they got a dream to do this. And so they moved their young family to Columbus, Indiana, and started a brand new church in a carpenter union hall of all places to help reach people who weren't interested in church. Fast forward 30 years later, 1991, my mom and dad had been, they'd pastored a couple different churches over about 15, 20 years of ministry, and they were in Michigan at the time, and they received a call or a burden to move back to this area, to the greater Indianapolis area, where they both had kind of grown up in this region, and to start a brand new church for people who were far from God. Almost the identical thing that their parents had, that my dad's parents had done. And then you fast forward another 15 years to 2006. Julie and I'd been a youth pastor, student pastor for 13 years. I kind of thought that was my life calling. That's what I was, you know, called to do. And yet I began to have this growing unsettledness. I call it a holy discontent. It was like a discontentedness, but it wasn't really because I wasn't happy. It was like God was developing a burden in us for something more. And that burden was for our friends, our neighbors, who increasingly were turned off by church. I mean, people that were interested in talking to us about Jesus, but every time we'd mention the word church, they'd totally check out of the conversation, which caused us to begin to ask the question, what if we created a church for people who hated church, where they could come and explore who Jesus really is? And so that was the beginning of what began the seed of Crosspoint. And what's fascinating about this to me is I was processing through this during the Fight Club over the last really 12 or 13 weeks and journaling at different points and beginning to track my down dream downlines, is I began to realize that, you know, sometimes you think, well, you know, one generation does what the next generation does what the previous generation does because it's in the genes. I don't think this is a gene thing. I mean, yeah, there might be some leadership genes that are there. I think this is a dream thing. I think that, see, you know, my father following in his father's footsteps, I don't know that he was ever expected or required to do that. I can guarantee you my parents never expected me to follow in my father's footsteps. In fact, my call to ministry has been a whole, like, story of resistance. I mean, I like to tell God how, you know, it's going to go. It doesn't work very well, in case you've ever tried that. I mean, I was at AU, you know, as a sophomore, and I get a letter from the university telling me I can't even continue to go to college there because I hadn't declared a major. And so I was in this, like, battle with God on what I was going to study because I'd looked at everything, so I thought, and I kept telling God, I'm out of options. There's nothing left. And he said, Kurt, there's one thing you haven't looked at. You haven't explored a degree in ministry. I said, it's off radar, God. It's not happening. Well, I took a class, and a class led to me declaring a major. And then I had another argument with God where I said, you know, God, I'll be a pastor, but I'm not going to be like a senior pastor. You can see how well that works. And so, you know, my whole calling has been one of resistance. And so as Julie and I began to develop this burden after 13 years of student college ministry, you know, a burden for our friends, for our neighbors who weren't connecting with the church. You know, I was resistant. And part of my resistance was because I'd seen some of the collateral damage that had happened with my parents. And I just didn't want that to happen to us. And I'll never forget standing in our kitchen and Julie looking at me and just saying, Kurt, why are you being hesitant on this? I mean, you're shaped for this. I mean, God has prepared you for this. And I had one of these moments where, maybe you've had these guys, where you begin to realize that, you know, my wife's voice seems very similar to the voice of the Holy Spirit. I mean, my wife just has this ability to have an intuitiveness that sometimes I miss. And so that began the journey to us beginning to form what became known as Crosspoint. These are dream downlines. My grandfather, my grandmother, chasing a dream that God had placed in their heart, wasn't just for them, even though they were meeting the needs of people. People were coming to Christ through their what they were doing, but they were inspiring a dream in their children. My dad and my mom receiving a call, and each of them would tell you it was a little bit differently. But they pursued what God had asked them to do, and not only were they meeting the needs of people who were coming to Christ through that experience, but they were inspiring the dream in their own children. And then 15 years later, here we are. It wasn't just them chasing their dream, but it was inspiring the dreams in here. So, I mean, as I began to process all this, I began to realize that we all sit here today as a result of my grandparents and my parents being willing to chase a dream. And it didn't always go the way they planned, but they inspired the next generation to chase their dreams. And what's really kind of cool is I began to realize we're going to be wrapping up with this idea of dreams and dream lineage and just share with you some of the things that's happened in my life. I began to realize, it wasn't until like Tuesday this week, I realized that both my mom and my dad were going to be here today. My dad was in first service because he's going to the race, and so he always pops in and then heads down to the track. My mom attends here regularly, and she serves here, and she's usually in second service. I believe she's here somewhere. And mom, and I think dad's gone, all right, I just want to say thank you for inspiring the dreams that led us to beginning Crosspoint. We appreciate it, all of us. Still. Thank you. I mean, is that a coincidence that it just happens that way? I don't think so. I mean, these are the dreams that you're currently dreaming aren't just for you, but they're actually inspiring those who are looking to you to lead them. And listen, Julie and I have no idea how this is going to play out in our own kids. I mean, we have no idea what the dreams our kids are going to be pursuing, but we want to leave a legacy in them that causes them to even do greater things than we're doing. And here's the crazy thing. One of the things I've been discovering as I've been processing this myself is that God doesn't waste suffering. You know, God doesn't waste disappointment. God doesn't waste even things like divorce. I mean, these are all things that are a part of some of my dream lineage going all the way back through my parents and grandparents. God doesn't even waste things like cancer and illness. He actually wants to recycle and repurpose and redeem those things to propel the next generation forward. I've shared it a couple of times over the last number of weeks and months that about 2 months ago, we discovered that my wife, Julie, has breast cancer. And you know, it was the last thing on our radar. We didn't expect cancer. Even when the doctor said, you know, hey, we want you to do a biopsy. We think, you know, we see some things we're not comfortable with. And, you know, we thought we were going to die of heart problems. She has a lot of heart problems in her family. I mean, I don't know what I was going to die from. Doing stupid things, probably. You know, I mean, this was like the last thing on our radar. And we caught it really early. I mean, we've just seen God's hand in this whole deal. And so many of you have been praying for us, and we're thankful for that. You've been expressing your encouragement and support, and it's meant the world to us. And she's doing great, by the way. She's in the middle of radiation treatments right now. She's got about 3 weeks to go until, you know, we're hoping we're past cancer, and now it's just going to be a part of the story that God's writing into our lives. But I share that to say earlier this spring, when we discovered we had cancer, this became one of the 500-pound lions in our life. And so we have a board in our kitchen, and we called it our dream board, and we put on the board, in fact, our kids wrote it up there, that one of our dreams, one of our 500-pound lions this year is to beat cancer. And it wasn't enough to just beat it. I mean, that's for us and for our family and to continue life, but to help people see God in the process. Because the best dreams always include others. And so, you know, it's interesting how this has played out. About 2.5-3 weeks ago, we met with one of Julie's radiation doctors who's going to be, you know, one of her oncologist doctors is going to be doing the radiation and is doing the radiation. And we didn't know what to expect in that meeting. You know, it's kind of daunting when you go in to think, okay, we're going to go and talk about the treatment over the next 21 days and what this is going to look like. And it was crazy because we spent 90% of that appointment laughing, of all things. We're in a cancer radiation appointment, and we're talking about our kids, and she's telling us about her kids, and she's talking about her 21-year-old son who's graduating from college out in California and how he doesn't have a plan on what he's going to do after college. And she's like, I'm not going to be that mom that lets him live in my basement. But she's like, I caved in. I told him he can live in my basement for 3 months, and then he's going to have to move out and live with a friend if he doesn't have a job. So he's got a 3-month runway. I'm going, man, you could come teach at Crosspoint. We're talking about this stuff. And so somewhere along the way, you know, she asks what Julie does, and she talks about how she works, you know, as an instructional coach here in HSC District, and I tell her I'm a pastor, and she goes, oh, well, I don't have a faith. I'm not really religious. I wish that I did, but I don't. But, oh, that's interesting. So anyway, we keep talking about our kids, and we're laughing, and I kid you not, 90% of the appointment was laughing and having fun. All of a sudden, midstream, Dr. Graybill gets real serious, and she says, Julie, you're going to do great with cancer. Julie stops. She says, well, why do you say that? And she says, you're going to do great with cancer because you have a happy-go-lucky spirit. And you don't have to have everything lined up. She's like, I have to have everything lined up. Everything's got to be planned out and in place, or it makes me nervous. Like my son not graduating, knowing he has a job, that makes me really nervous. But she said, you just roll with it, and whatever comes, you look at it as another opportunity to go over and accomplish something. And then she says, and you have a faith And people who have a faith always do better with cancer. I wish I had a faith, but I don't have a faith. Well, that was interesting. And so that launched into about a 5-minute conversation about what it means to have a faith. And in fact, at the end of that conversation, we actually invited her to Crosspoint. I don't know if she'll ever show up, but we said, man, we're a church for people like you. I mean, we're a church for people who basically don't like church. She's like, I didn't know there was such a thing. I'm like, yeah, we do it every weekend. I mean, you see, if you stumbled in here and you thought we were just a normal church, you'd probably be thinking why you're here, right? Because, see, we're not here to appease people that are already convinced. We're here to be a church for people who are not yet convinced. And we had a really cool conversation with her. I don't know if she's going to show up, but I can tell you Julie still has three weeks of appointments with her to make a difference, to be a light, to not only beat cancer, but to help people see Jesus in the process. And so, you know, we go home and we tell our kids about these stories, and this thing right here is happening. It's happening. You know, and we said, so we don't know if she'll ever show up here, but it's inspiring in our kids that they can go after things and dream and do even greater things than we're doing right now. Who are you building into? That dream God's put in your heart, put in your life, that 500-pound lion you're facing, whatever it might be. I mean, what are you fighting for and who are you fighting with? And is the story that God's writing in your life compelling enough to draw the next generation who's coming behind you? So I think we all want to be difference makers, but we get really confused on what it means to be a difference maker, don't we? And we think, you know, I have to be famous, or I have to, you know, I have to do some grand gesture, like buy a zoo. I have to, you know, do something totally outrageous, or I have to make the nightly news, or I have to have a platform to work off of. And you might say, well, Kurt, that's why you can have influence like that in a doctor's office, because you have a platform. No, that wasn't this platform. That was just me being the husband of a wife who has cancer, and yet allowing God, as we chase that 500-pound lion, to use that to help others see him in the process. See, sometimes we get inheritance and legacy confused. Let me define the two for you if you don't know the difference. See, an inheritance is what we leave for someone, but a legacy is what we leave in someone. See, I want us to be a people who leave a legacy. See, an inheritance is where we're so concerned with how am I building up my accounts or what I have or everything around me? How am I protecting everything that I have in order that someday I may be able to leave it for those who maybe I don't even know? So you can't have a legacy with somebody you don't know. See, an inheritance is about, am I successful enough? Am I storing enough? Am I keeping enough to myself in order that I can pass something on when my life is come and gone? Whereas a legacy is what you leave in someone. You have to know the people. You have to interact with those that you leave a legacy in. It's about how am I spending my life? How am I divesting my life into others? How am I, if I'm really leaving something in someone, then that means I'm selfish, selflessly, constantly pouring myself into others and giving up my life for others in order that they may have the chance to do something greater than even what I'm doing. In fact, this was at the core of everything Jesus talked about. Take a look at Matthew 16. Jesus said, for whoever will save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake, he says, only those are going to find it. So I come back to the question, what's the story that God's writing in your life saying to those who are coming behind you? Are you just focused on leaving something for them, or are you constantly building something into them? I was recently given the challenge of writing my epitaph on a little block of wood, and in 10 words or less. I don't know if you ever tried to write something of what you think you would want said about you when your life is come and gone. And so this is a challenge in the Fight Club that we are going through, and you got to do it sometime if you've never done this. It really makes you evaluate what your life's about. And so here's what I wrote. Here's what my block said. I said, when Kurt Walters is come and gone, I hope it can be said that he lived and inspired others to pursue Jesus, love generously, and live courageously. And I tell you what, if I can do those things, and I guarantee you my kids and those who come behind me will do far greater things than I've ever been able to do. So as we wrap up this series, I want you to take out your connection card. We're going to have kind of a mark the moment moment. This is one of those defining moments that could change the trajectory of your future. And so I want you to grab your rocket out of your bag. You can leave the rest in here. And on this rocket, one of the next steps today is we're going to write down the names of those who we want to leave a legacy in. Not just for, not leave something when we go, but who's that list of people I'm pouring myself into right now? And I just want you to write them on this rocket. In fact, for me, it includes my kids. So this has Macy. If your pen doesn't write, just write on paper and then go back and it'll write. Macy. Matt. Maggie. And Meredith. Other people I'm building into, I build into my staff team on a regular basis. I build into young pastors. Those are people I'm leaving something in, young pastors that I'm coaching. We've got a handful of emerging leaders here at Crosspoint that I'm constantly spending time with, pouring myself into. I just want you to write down the list. I want this to be one of those things that you see and you say, you know, here's the people I'm being intentional to build into so the next generation can do greater things. And I want you to take this and put it some way, place where you're going to see it regularly. You know, Galatians chapter 6, Paul, you may not know how that's going to play out. You might think, well, can God really use me? Here's what Paul says. He says, let us not become weary of doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. There might be days where like, man, I'm not making a difference. I don't think anything I'm doing is actually producing anything. Look at what Paul says right there. He says, for it will reap a harvest if you what? If you don't give up. He says, don't give up. He says, let us continue to do good to all people. Another way you can do this in your weekly each week over these last weeks has been a volunteer card. Do you realize the single greatest attribute that the next generation needs that will propel them heads and shoulders above the rest of their generation is developing and cultivating a life that's more about serving others than about making something for themselves? Well, how do you build that? The greatest way you can build that in the people that are looking to you is to model it for them. To model it for them, to give your life away to serving others. It's one of the reasons. There's multiple ways in our community to give your life away, but you know, we'd love for you to join our team here at Crosspoint if you're not a part of serving. I mean, if you're not a part of serving, whether it's in the band or greeting or serving coffee or in some of our kids' environments, I mean, these are all ways where ordinary people regularly do something outside of themselves to impact the trajectories of kids and others that have eternal rewards. And so maybe one of your steps is to just set a model of serving and giving your life to others, not just for what you benefit of yourself. Next week, we have baptism here at Crosspoint. And I tell you what, it's going to be an open baptism. And if one of the greatest faith legacies you can leave for your kids is an example of showing them that you're following after the heart of Jesus. Doesn't mean you're perfect in it. But if you've, at some point in your life, received Jesus and you've never taken the step of water baptism, baptism is simply just an expression, an outward expression of what Jesus has done in our lives. But I tell you what, it may be your next spiritual step. And what our kids need isn't 20 seconds of courage. What they need is a lifetime of obedience. And one of the very first things Jesus asks us to do after we receive him is to exhibit that through the expression of water baptism. So maybe one of your next steps is to just show your kids or anybody behind you who's looking to you to say, hey, I'm with God and God's with me. Maybe that's one of your next steps. Or maybe your next step is come to the place of beginning in a relationship with Jesus. Maybe you've never taken that step. Maybe you've been here exploring Jesus and trying to figure things out. Or maybe you wandered away from faith for a while and you're back trying to re-engage. This is one of the biggest decisions you'll ever make. If you want to leave a legacy, if you want to put something in the next generation, then allow God to do something in you, and I guarantee you, your legacy will be felt for generation after generation after generation. In fact, it can begin even right now. Let me pray toward that end for us. Heavenly Father, I just pray that your grace and your love would just kind of wash over every single person that's within earshot of my voice right now. God, we're not perfect, and even as we're talking about dreams, we probably can think more of the ways we fail than we've succeeded, and yet, God, it's in the chase that we inspire others. And God, we just want to be a people who run after you, and we commit our lives to that right now. In fact, God, even for some of the sin problems that we have and we exhibit on a regular basis in our lives, maybe what we don't need is to just get better at not sinning or to get better at this or not so bad at that. But what we really need is a bigger dream or a bigger vision for what you've called me to be and do. And as we begin chasing that, we become so consumed with that, God, that we naturally fall in line with following you and running after you. I just pray that you give us that this morning, God, if that's what we're desiring. And Jesus, for those of us whose hearts have maybe been warmed over these past few weeks, or maybe even in this moment right now,
Maybe we've wandered away from faith and we're ready to reengage. God, wherever we may be, if we don't know you as our Heavenly Father and as our Savior, God, that can change right now by simply just saying, God, would you come in? Jesus, would you forgive me of my sins? Jesus, would your grace just cover every aspect of my life, all my indiscretions, all the ways I've blown it? God, thank you that we can be forgiven, that we can be made right with you, not because of anything we've done, God, but because of everything you've done in us and for us and on behalf of us.